Good morning, my dear brothers and sisters. My brothers and sisters in the wonderful calling which we've been called. Which is actually a phrase that's actually written in scriptures. The calling of which we've been called. And we've actually read it fairly recently in our Bible readings. I don't know if you recall when we read this. And it was, again, very recently. A hint is it was in the New Testament, and it was an epistle. Any thoughts when we read it? It's in today's readings, right? We just read this in the fourth chapter in verse 1. And it was the words of the Apostle Paul right there, and what he's doing is he's calling the Ephesian brothers and sisters. He's saying, I therefore, a prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation or the invitation or the calling wherewith you have been called. Now, why is this so important? Why would Paul write and beseech the ecclesia to walk worthy of the calling of which we've been called? I suppose, just asking that question, there's many answers that we can give, and it's quite possible that each of us have our own, right, answers to why Paul saw this as important. And I venture to say that most of our responses will probably be pretty accurate, right? But at the top of that list, of course, would be that there's really nothing else that we can give back to our Father, right, other than obedience, right? For everything's His. Everything belongs to His. That's the one thing that we can give. And very close behind that is that the man that we come to remember today gave his life so that we can have this opportunity to give back the one thing that we can give back to the Father. To obey. To walk worthy of this calling. And we know the Apostle Paul, throughout his writings, that he was very much in tune with the weaknesses that we have, right? He knew very well the nature of our makeup to succumb to the temptations that cross our paths. With all that influence around us, we can find ourselves distracted from walking worthy. We're so vulnerable to this draw of the flesh. And we can even sometimes forget our holy calling. Be ye holy, for I am holy. And he knew that we may understand this magnificent calling of which we've been called, we can somehow, some way, find a way to blow it so very close to the kingdom. In our exhortation last week, our brother Jason, he tapped on this thought, didn't he? He said that the nation was 11 days away from the promised land. Now, here today, 7 days later, we find the nation, in our readings today, coincidentally, 7 days closer to their destination, the promised land. And we're at the end of the wilderness wanderings of the children of Israel in our first portion readings. The last encampment, the very last encampment that they would be found in before they entered in the promised land. In our first verse of our Numbers reading today, I'll give you time to turn that up, Numbers 22. The first verse says, and the children of Israel set forward and pitched in the plains of Moab on this side of Jordan by Jericho. Now, I know you just got to 22, but turn to 25 now. Turning our Bibles now to 25, our readings for tomorrow, Numbers 25 verse 1 says, and Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. So now, keeping your finger here in 25, flip your Bibles over to Numbers 33. Numbers 33 verse 49, it says that Shittim was the very last place where the children of Israel would encamp before they enter into the promised land. And Numbers 33, verse 49 says, and they pitched it by Jordan from Beth Shemesh even into Abel Shittim in the plains of Moab. So Shittim was in the plains of Moab. This is where we find ourselves in our readings just today. In Numbers 31, verse 12, as well, it says that they were right next to Jordan. And from thence they'd cross into the promised land. So they were at the eve of victory. The people were on the edge of the success of 40 long years of journey. And at that moment of time in the history of the nation, at that very last moment before they crossed in the promised land, came the warning of corruption. Again, what we're going to read about tomorrow. That might snatch that victory from the nation, from the plague that we're going to read that was to follow. And we know it was a terrible moment in Israel's history, wasn't it? The fact that this horrible thing would happen perhaps at the worst possible time that it could happen. Where they're right there. They're right at the borders of the kingdom. Right before they crossed into the promised land. Well, it was while they were encamped there is when Balaam and Balak were in communication. In what's accounted for in today's readings, in Genesis, it was Numbers 22 and 23, were our scheduled readings for today. And just looking at the 25th chapter, verse 1 again, Numbers 25, verse 1, it says, "In Israel abode in Shittim, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab." So what is the verse that precedes that? Well, that's 24, verse 25, right? So if we look at it, at first sight, if you read this verse to yourself, it doesn't look like there's any connection with what we have in the 25th verse 1, right? Does there? 24, verse 25 says, "And Balaam rose up, and he went and returned to his place, and Balak also went up his way." And that last verse of today's 22nd chapter, flipping your Bibles there, it says that Balak took Balaam and brought him up to the high places of Baal, and that from thence he might see the utmost part of the people. So we could easily get the impression in 24, just 20, verse 25, that both Balak and Balaam, after looking over from the elevation of the hill that they were standing upon, looking towards Israel and seeing the congregation of Israel, that they left in defeat. They just, you know, went their ways because they couldn't find a means of being able to effectively, or they were unable to conquer Israel. So they went their ways. They were unable to curse Israel. They were unable to defeat Israel. And yet, of course, when it says they went their way, well, that's the thing we got to look at. Because there's a definite connection between these two verses, between the way that Balaam went and the way that Balak went, the last verse of 24, and the result of what happens in the next verse, Numbers 25, verse 1. We're told in Numbers 31, if you come to Numbers 31, just for a moment, we'll trace this idea through. We're told in Numbers 31, verse 16, that it wasn't by chance that the children of Israel began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. Moses says in the 16th verse, "Behold, these caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam to commit trespass against Yahweh in the matter of Peor. And there was a plague among the congregation of Yahweh. These caused the children of Israel through the counsel of Balaam," says the record. So whatever happened when Balaam went his way, he didn't leave without first giving counsel. He, in fact, left Balaam with a very valuable piece of information, didn't he? And the message that he left him with was the secret by which Israel can be destroyed, that Israel could be conquered. And didn't Balaam say in today's reading, actually we didn't read it, but I'll read this for you. Numbers 23, verse 8 says, "How shall I curse whom God hath not cursed? Or how shall I defy whom Yahweh hath not defied? For from the tops of the rocks I see him, from the hills I behold him. And lo, the people shall dwell alone, and they shall not be reckoned among the nations." Ah, but there is one way that you can accomplish this, Balak. Now, if you were to come, let's come to the prophecy of Micah. were told about this secret method of accomplishing what Balak was trying to accomplish. And in Numbers, rather, Micah chapter 6, verse 5, isn't this the significance of what we read here in Numbers 24? It says, Balaam rose up his way, Balak went and rose up his way. Okay, and by the way, there's two ways of reading that, right? When it says, and Balaam rose up and went his way, and Balak rose up and also went his way. There's two ways of reading that. You could read this, that Balaam rose up and went his way, and then Balak, he went his way. But there's also, you could read it as, Balaam rose up and went his way, and Balak also went up his way. So hearing what we're going to gather, what we're going to presume as we go through these verses, is that Balak went Balaam's way. So hearing Balaam's counsel, hearing Balaam's advice, we read in Micah chapter 6, verse 5, O my people, remember now what Balak, king of Moab, consulted. We haven't read this yet in Numbers. And what Balaam, the son of Beor, answered him from Shittim unto Gilgal, that ye may know the righteousness of Yahweh. And at the very end of these efforts by Balak to involve Balaam to curse Israel with destruction, which of course he wasn't able to complete, Balaam finally gives Balak counsel that would be necessary to defeat Israel. And that counsel is given to us in Revelation. Let's turn up Revelation chapter 2. We're told exactly what that counsel was. You take notice of the connection of the thought. Verse 14 says, But I have a few things against thee, because thou hast there them that hold the doctrine of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel. Now, what was this stumbling block? What was this secret method that Balaam gave Balak? Well, the secret is at the end of that 14th verse. To eat things sacrificed unto idols and to commit fornication. To eat things sacrificed into idols, that's corruption of principles, and to commit fornication, that's the corruption of practice. And we see this great secret that Balaam passed to Balak, by which Israel might be overthrown. He says, see, if you want to defeat Israel, first what you got to do is you have to corrupt their principles. Because if their principles are corrupted, you will also, inevitably, as a result of that, corrupt their practice. And as a result of corrupting their practice, as a result of corrupting their practice, their God's anger will be kindled against them. This is the only way, Balak, to get this done. And the counsel of Balaam was very wise from the mindset of man, right? Very wise according to the flesh, very wise of man's own understanding, as it's termed in our Proverbs readings. And the reason why, coming back to Numbers 25, coming back there to Numbers 25, verse 1, we note the verbiage again. It says, and the people began to commit whoredom. So it wasn't an accident of how this all transpired. Because Balak had taken up counsel to Balaam, and it invited Israel. He invited them over that they might corrupt their practices, so that then, in turn, it might corrupt their principles, that it might corrupt their practices. And we take notice that the people were willing. The people were willing to allow their principles to be corrupted. And we could follow this through on verse 2 of 25. And they called the people into the sacrifices of their gods, and the people that eat and bowed down to their gods. That's a corruption of principle, of doctrine. And as a result, we're told in verse 3, and Israel joined himself to Baal Peor. That's the consequence. That's the inevitable consequence. The corruption of practice. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. Which is why, brothers and sisters, we need to be very mindful. Very mindful as to what could even corrupt our principles. Our principles are like the protective shell of our practices. And when these principles are no longer there, the practices become exposed. They become vulnerable. And what's more important to our Father than our practices? What's more important to our Father than the adherence to his commandments, to obedience? And we might hear that faint echo of what we read in our Ephesians readings, chapter 4, verse 1. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation, the invitation, the calling of wherewith you've been called. And it's only 1 month. We're only 1 month away from what we read in Leviticus chapter 26. If you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments and do them, then I will give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield their increase. Verse 14, and if you will not hearken to me and will not do these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, if your soul abhor my judgments, so that you will not do my commandments, but even break my commandments. And it goes through 46 verses that speak very specifically of the hard requirements of God. Very, very clear. Very black and white. If you do this, then I'll do this. If you do this evil, there will be punishment. If you do this good, there will be reward. So really, we need to be very mindful of even the erosion of principle. We must be very, even very wary of the subtle chipping away of principles. Because one day, we may wake up and find that our practices are very different than when they were 10 years ago, 20 years ago. And this could happen even when we're so very close to the promised land. And that phrase, joined himself, is a very telling phrase when we consider what the people were doing. He joined themselves. It says, we notice that they called the people into the sacrifices of their gods. And the word there in the Hebrew is in the feminine, which is interesting. And I think it's the feminine, because it was the daughters of Moab, we read in verse 1, that invited the people to the sacrifice of their gods. But who would join them? Well, the answer is, it says, and Israel joined himself into Baal Peor. So it was the daughters of Moab in verse 1, and it was the men of Israel in verse 3. And the word joined there, it means to link. It's a word that tells us, we understand what it's telling us, That link, that very consummation that was required of the worship of Baal Peor. And we know that this matter of Baal Peor in scriptures, we know because we read that it forever corrupted the nation. They never recovered from what we're going to be reading about tomorrow. Hosea chapter 9, it tells us, and let's turn that up real quick. Hosea chapter 9. Verse 10, we see that horrible was this episode in Israel's history that it lived on in the memory in this nation as their worst moments of all time. And in Hosea chapter 9, verse 10, it says, I found Israel like grapes in the wilderness. I saw your fathers as the first stripe in the fig tree at her first time, but they went to Baal Peor and separated themselves into that shame, and their abominations were according as they loved. It says they went to Baal Peor, says God, and they separated themselves from their God. Further, it was at the very moment in which they were about to enter into the promised land. Now, of course, it's too obvious for us to miss the parallels of what we've been reading in our first portion reading. We are on the edge of the promised land. We are right there. We're about to enter into the kingdom. And dangers await us on every side. As we are almost like on the plains of Shittim, right? As it were, right? Almost there. And one of the lessons of chapter 25 is the warning for all those who were almost at the kingdom. They were almost there, and how easily they had fallen right at the last hour because of corruption. Because of first of principle, then of practice, which might rob them of the opportunity to cross, to make that crossing to the promised land. Now, in our Proverbs reading, it brought us to the 16th chapter. It's a proverb that speaks of the fact that we have every reason to put our faith in God and God alone, because it is He that knows the end from the beginning. It is He who is ultimately in control of all things. In our first portion reading, the men of Israel had a lapse in understanding of that, didn't they? The nation was to learn that day the same exhortation that we're gathering from this example this afternoon, is that we, as that they, must be cognizant of the fact that influences can distract us. Like the adulterous woman that was compared against wisdom in our Proverbs 7 reading, if you recollect that, who evenly, purposely displayed, very intentionally, purposely displayed the characteristics of the virtuous woman, but was a wolf in sheep's clothing, impersonating a virtuous woman to lull, to lure. And the other lesson we gather, that the nation was to gather, and what we gather out of Proverbs, is that we could so easily succumb to the flesh. Of course, the other lesson Israel has learned is we can forget our holy calling. Be ye holy, for I am holy. And the people of Israel, they forgot who it is that knows all, who it is that is in control of all things, and how minute we are in comparison to all of heaven and earth, and that He was watching as all that Israel was doing was all transpired. They fell for the adulterous woman, didn't they? So close to the promised land, at the last hour, because of corruption, they first allowed a corruption of principle and then practice, and they lost their opportunity to cross into that promised land. Now, the wisdom of these inspired Proverbs, it continues today in the 16th chapter to outline a contrast, is what the 16th chapter of Proverbs does. It contrasts between righteousness and evil. And what Solomon does in the first three verses is he describes the role and the guidance of Yahweh. He shows that man can prepare for outcome. They can do all they can to prepare for outcome, but it is God that determines the finality of it all. His will be done, and it'll be with or without us. And through the 40 years of wilderness wanderings, Yahweh was leading the people to the promised land. They were at His mercy as He guided them from foreign land to foreign land. And in verses 4 through 9, it speaks of the distribution of rewards and punishments. And Solomon goes on to state that the true peace of mind, it comes from Yahweh, as it says in verse 7. And through the 40 years of wilderness wanderings established time and time again to Israel was that they could choose either life or they could choose death. But it will be based on how diligently they would walk worthy to the calling of which they've been called. In verses 10 through 15, we see the divine authority as that was manifested by the king, and that the example of a good king should be followed by the people. And as we follow the 40 years of wilderness wanderings, the people were given a blueprint of everything they needed to be to become, and it was done by the king himself. This instruction, be ye holy, for I am holy. In verses 27 through 30, the effects of evil conduct is what we read of in Proverbs 16 on all those that were witness to unrighteousness. And in the 40 years of wilderness wanderings, there were episodes in which the wicked would be poor examples to the wise. And we read that. We would have read that. It was scheduled in our readings today. And we're going to read about that tomorrow. The sons of God would eventually become sons of men, corrupting the nation, costing lives. And then Proverbs 16, verse 31 through 32, we see the effect. Solomon talks about the effect of good conduct. And through the 40 years of wilderness wanderings, they were witness to the conduct of the man with the hoary head in Moses, right? Who did all that was necessary to get the people where they needed to be. And even at times, making the unpopular decision that would cost lives, but would save a remnant. And we're going to read about that tomorrow. And then lastly, in verse 33, it speaks of the more excellent way. The development of faith that provides the means of developing God manifestation. The word lap there in that verse signifies bosom. And it refers to the bag of the ephod of the high priest, in which were the lots or the stones by which Yahweh, he gave his true judgments and decisions, right? Thus, the lot, it didn't signify chance, but it signified Yahweh's determination of the matter that goes all the way back to the first verse. All things are in control of the Father. And the people that were stationed at Shittim forgot who knows all, who's in control of all things, how minute and small we are in comparison to the grand, you know, scale of things. And while they were behaving as they were behaving, he was watching all that transpired as they fell for the adulterous woman, so close to the promised land, at that last hour, because of corruption, first they allowed corruption of principle, then corruption of practice, and then they lost their opportunity to enter into the promised land. Now, by the time we get to the third portion reading today, we can't help but see the similarities that we have between ourselves and the Ephesians ecclesia. Because the Ephesians, they too had been called, right? We read bond and free, rich and poor. They had different abilities. They had different backgrounds. They were Gentiles that were called out of the world, verse 19 of chapter 3, to know the love of Christ, which passeth knowledge, or that gnosis, that Greek word gnosis, a seeking to know, which passeth knowledge, that ye might be filled with the fullness of God. What an expression that is, if you think about it. How can we possibly comprehend all that that really implies, to be filled with the fullness of God? Remarkable. This is the instruction of Paul to the ecclesia. The Apostle Paul, he begins the fourth chapter by exhorting them to walk worthy of their calling, to keep the unity of spirit in truth. That there was but one body, one spirit, one Lord, one God, verses 1 through 6. And he would go on to write in verses 7 through 16 that each member had a part to play in the ecclesia. Various gifts of the Spirit were distributed among the members of the ecclesia so that the whole body might be knit in truth by the combined efforts of every member in a spirit of love. In the view of this, they must realize that they were now leading a new life. And Christ summarizes verses 17 through 24. Therefore, they were to put away the old man, and they were to demonstrate a new life in this practice, as verse 24, which after God is created in righteousness, in true holiness. With the margin helping us out, it says that it is holiness in truth. Oh, yes. Our calling is enveloped in holiness of truth. And here we are now, brothers and sisters. We're on the edge of the promised land. We're about to enter the kingdom of God. And the same dangers await us on every side of us. As we encamp, as it were, on the plains of Shittim, and we're almost there. And one of the lessons of Numbers 25 is the warning for all those who are almost there at the kingdom. How easy it is, how possible it is for us to fall at the last hour because of corruption. First of principle, then of practice, which might rob us of the opportunity to cross into that promised land. In our readings tomorrow, the apostle, he's going to warn the Ephesians to not lose the battle, to not lose the fight, which might rob them of the opportunity to cross into the promised land. And he writes in chapter 5, verse 6, "Let no man deceive you by vain words, for because of these things cometh the wrath of God upon the children of obedience." Like the daughters of Moab, of 25, verse 1 of Numbers, that invited the people to sacrifice unto their gods. And Israel joined himself with Baal Peor, which could easily be said, the Thousand Oaks Ecclesia joined himself to another gospel. Who's to say that that couldn't happen? In chapter 5, verse 7 of Ephesians, Paul's going to go on to exhort the Ecclesia, "Be not ye therefore partakers with them, for ye were sometimes darkness, but now ye are light in the Lord. Walk as children of the light. For the fruit of the Spirit is in all goodness and righteousness and truth, proving what is acceptable in the Lord, and have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather reprove them." If for no other reason than to give to our God the only thing that we possibly can give back to him. The demonstration of our love to him. And adherence to all that he requires. And in that demonstration, reciprocate to the Son in some way, who we come to remember this morning, who gave his life so that we might have an opportunity to give back the one thing that we possibly can give back to the creator of all heaven and earth. A willing heart to obey. To walk worthy of this calling.